Midlife in our 40s and 50s can be a challenging time. So many things are changing: our bodies, our health, our relationships, our work, our responsibilities, our dreams. We try to balance everything, but sometimes it can be a struggle to keep our bodies calm in the face of adversity, our minds consistent against distractions, and our hearts dependable in defiance of enticement. But what if we gain greater self-knowledge to gain wisdom? Wisdom to acknowledge and handle our ignorance, uncertainties, and limitations. Wisdom to know that whilst we can certainly achieve external success using our strengths, we can also gain character acknowledging our weaknesses. And the wisdom to know that whilst a lot is up to us, other factors such as luck, societal expectations, and perhaps fate itself conspire to test our journey through midlife. A journey from which we might not only ask, what do I want from life, but what does life want from me? Drawing on a myriad of research from scientific studies, philosophy, life coaching techniques, and anecdotal tales, the Midlife Maps podcast provides a reliable source of introductory information for this much understudied and often forgotten period of our lives. So join the Midlife Maps podcast as we find a map to navigate that. As Oscar Wilde said in The Picture of Dorian Gray, I don't want to be at the mercy of my emotions. I want to use them, to enjoy them, and to dominate them. Hi there, my name's Samantha Sashin, and welcome to Midlife Maps, the show for navigating our 40s and 50s. Today on our show, I'm joined by Melinda Ashford, my super-duper co-host, and we're talking about developing self-control in midlife. So, we find we've stumbled into the jungle of uncontrolled emotions, panting and wheezing as we try to find something supportive to lean upon. We know this jungle will make us react in unexpected ways. We wonder if we should have calmed ourselves before exploding or resisted polishing off the entire block of caramel chocolate. But self-control isn't just a fashionable tool in this jungle. It's vital to our success. People who are good at practicing self-control are more popular and successful in many areas of life. But how do we successfully develop self-control in midlife? Well, stay with us because we're going to come up with a map to navigate that.
Our podcast today is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people, and we wish to acknowledge them as traditional owners. We would like to pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and emerging.
Thank you, Mel. So, why can having self-control midlife be tricky? Well, during this time of life, we often have an inordinate amount of pressure placed upon us. Things like our own and others' health issues, marital woes, financial stresses, hormonal changes, just to name a few. This can make it tricky for us to always remain in control of our emotions, especially when we're tired or stressed. On top of this, we're always being bombarded with a plethora of choices and temptations to test our self-control. And we know that sometimes there'll be times that this jungle will make us react in ways that perhaps we don't want to. Maybe we should have calmed ourselves before exploding, or chosen our words more carefully before venting. Or should we? Maybe the situation demanded the venting of powerful emotions for our well-being and sanity. Or perhaps we know that polishing off the entire block of caramel chocolate wasn't the best idea. Either way, we must safely find a way out of this hazardous environment by exercising self-control or self-discipline. There are some interesting reasons why we may find it difficult to exercise self-control in certain situations. For one, many of us have problems with our self-control because we overestimate our ability to resist temptation. We're just not that good at resisting. Furthermore, we seem to believe we have unlimited self-control when researchers assert that self-control is actually a limited resource. At any one time, we only have so much in the tank. So with this in mind, we need to carefully plan our trek through this jungle of uncontrolled emotions, since changing our self-control is a challenging journey, not a one-off occurrence. So, Mel, within the realms of legality and propriety, are there any examples that you have where you just lost it? You just feel that you haven't exercised self-control or self-discipline?
Look, I think I can honestly say I have lost it.
What?
Many a time. What? Many a time. Challenging things. I'd say with family, mm-hmm. parenting issues and partnership, adults, parents, and even and when I was younger with my own parents and things like that, you tend to, you know, voice everything all at once. Mm. So, and then you a lot of time is spent in that energy output. You know, a lot of that time is wasted and it's your first knee-jerk reaction and then all it does is leave you pretty empty and low.
Yeah.
You know, and then leaves everybody else a little bit confused and scared.
Running for the hills.
Yeah, running for the hills. So that's, I have been known to do that and you think about the reasons you're doing it. It's just to get things off your chest.
Yeah.
Probably to injure, to hurt, to stop whatever's going on. And, you know, and that first instincts and you know, I'm one to eat my feelings, could you say that?
Mm.
So I use that as a crutch.
Yeah.
And that is also not meeting some of my values of taking care of myself, modelling good examples. But it feeds that need at the time. It does. Feeds that need at the time. But in the bigger picture, if you were just to take that, and I've progressively improved this behaviour, over time and just consider myself and think, well, you know, if I wait 10 minutes or if I half an hour, will I, you know, once everything, if I still wanting that, yeah. But if I can subside those urges or those feelings, understanding myself why I'm feeling those things, then I can progress to the next phase.
But it's not easy, is it?
No. No, not at all.
That's the thing, self-control. And as studies have shown and experts say, self-control, it's a limited resource. It's like a fuel tank.
Yes.
That if you try and exercise self-control across every area of your life at the same time, in the same day, good luck.
Yes, that's because right. Something's got to give.
Yeah, something's got to give.
Yeah.
And what you talk about, relationships, definitely a common thing. And food as well. I mean, bring on barbecue shapes. I can polish off a whole box in one sitting.
That's right.
Like nothing else.
Yeah.
I don't know what they put in it, but I can
But anyway. Well, but yeah, I have my vices exactly right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And isn't it funny that we can probably display self-control in a different environments? Our levels are different, like in a workplace.
Yes.
Our self-control, our professionalism will come
Great
in.
Point.
I can see people probably inside internally going, oh, do I have to explain this again? But they're demonstrating their self-control while teaching me a new job.
Yes.
So those things, and so I can do the same thing for others as well. I can demonstrate that for others. But then I guess the emotions come into it with the people you live with and the closer people within your inner circle.
Yes.
So that's where you start to, you can let those things slide.
Yes, you can see. Yes, that's a good point. Good point. I'm sure we can give lots of examples of times when we haven't kept so much self-control. We certainly can. But what can we gain if we do manage to develop self-control? Well, it turns out that self-control or self-discipline isn't just a fashionable tool. It's vital to our success. In fact, people who are good at practicing self-control tend to be more popular and successful in many areas of life. Studies have shown that self-control is even linked to slowing aging. Oh, that sounds good. Ironically, our desire for self-control comes right at the moment we need it, but haven't necessarily developed it. When we can't pay a bill is when we wish we'd been self-disciplined enough to regularly save from an early age, for example. So it's definitely something that takes time to cultivate. But a word of warning. Some studies have found it's not always healthy to control our emotions. In some circumstances, we need to let our emotions guide us to leave difficult or unsafe situations. If we rely on reasoning our way out, we may not find urgent solutions.
That makes sense. And can I give an example here on that last point?
Oh, yes, sure.
Okay, I'll leave that. Where with difficult, unsafe situations. So we recently had a situation where we had someone come into our home. Thankfully, I wasn't there. My husband was there. And so his instincts took over, that you know, fight or flight, freeze. Well, he went into the fight, and that's where there was no self-control. It was just that body behaving without thought. But instinctively, like animals, he went loud, big, noisy, physical presence, and he chased the person off our property. While doing so, being as loud and abusive as everything you could imagine would come out, but just that noise and that presence got that situation in control,
didn't it, in a situation.
The person got away, which is I'm really quite thankful for, but it was enough. So he did what I would correlate it to, and I've said it to him, so it's no surprise. I said, you were the animal, you were the dog, you behaved, because the dogs were asleep by the fire. So you behaved in what you would hope the dog would do.
Yes.
They became aggressive.
Yes.
Got loud, fast, did all those protective measures.
Yes, he let his emotions decide his actions.
That's right.
They were appropriate it in wasn't the situation. It wasn't a time to think rationally.
You weren't going to sit there and go, excuse me, would you like a cuppa?
Sorry to bother you.
Yeah, that's right.
Would you mind telling me why you're in my home?
Can I interrupt you for a moment? Is it okay?
Whenever you're ready.
Yes, that's right. So he did what was necessary.
Great example. Yes, that's right. I have a similar example where back in the day my eldest son was a toddler and he ran onto the road. And I, you know, it's actually my husband at the time, he grabbed him, yelled at him. It was just pure raw emotion of protectiveness and fear to just grab this child off from being hit by a car. I mean, there are times when raw emotion shouldn't be diluted, if you like, or rationalized because you may be, or loved one may be, in a dangerous situation that requires
urgent
reactions.
Response,
exactly. So, So how do we navigate this jungle of uncontrolled emotions to gain self-control midlife? Well, I actually have 13 tools that we can arm ourselves
13.
With, I know, to navigate this tricky jungle. So the first thing to consider is being flexible by having contextually appropriate emotional regulation, which is like what we just spoke about, isn't it? That is, when the situation can be changed, it's better to let our emotions, whatever they may be, motivate that change rather than trying to change the emotions. When the situation can't be changed, however, it's better to try and change the emotion. For example, someone breaking up with us is a situation we can't control, so we must change the emotion. Our poor work performance, however, is within our control, so it's better to let our emotions motivate positive change. So it's probably a bit convoluted the way that I've said that, but perhaps saying that, or to summarise it, is that if it is within your control, then emotions can be used to motivate change. So if you're not happy with your work performance, for instance, the emotion of perhaps whatever you might feel, shame, disappointment, humiliation, can be the driver that changes your behaviour.
Yes.
So that emotion, fantastic.
We've learned,
exactly. But if something happens with it outside our control, well, you know, the emotion, we have to change the emotion and how we view it. It's changing our perspective of it and reframing it, if you like.
Yeah.
So the second thing to consider is feeling grateful. Studies have shown that those amongst us who practice gratitude towards everyday events are more patient, thus increasing self-control. Taking a moment to just, okay, well, even though that person cut in front of me on the road, I'm grateful that, okay, I'm in a car, nothing happened, nothing really.
You know, if that's the worst that can happen in my day, that's okay.
Then so be it, exactly. A third thing to consider is the control of our emotions in meditation, by doing meditation. This practice isn't just for the naturally mindful, though. Even beginners can control their emotions through meditation, according to studies, which always comes up. Yes, it always comes up. And we were talking about this today, weren't we, about meditation. The importance of meditation. We're talking about it in different contexts, but definitely in the area of just calming ourselves and gain the self-control and the patience that we need.
For those of us who need that, we underestimate its value because it's hard.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. It definitely takes practice. Fourthly, be aware that we have a low tank of self-control, as this will be the time we give in to temptation. So a classic is, as they say, never go grocery shopping on an empty stomach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we're just trying to use our willpower not to buy the barbecue shapes that are
well,
on special.
Well, that's it.
Because right. I don't need three boxes of them.
And the way those marketing tools that they use, stick them on.
Yes, those marketing tools, my gosh.
It can't be helped,
what
people.
Are they
it just
thinking?
Can't be helped.
I know, I know.
Someone's paid to do that job.
That's right. That's right. God bless their cotton socks. So, yes, low tanks of self-control is not a great time to put ourselves in the way of temptation. Well, going on to the fifth point, remove temptations. Don't set ourselves up for failure by having temptation nearby, such as no junk food in the house or unlimited cash at the shopping centre, for instance.
True.
You know, going window shopping when we really shouldn't be going shopping and we're just trying to, again, rely on willpower not to buy that really cool pair of shoes.
That's right.
So that's
changing the focus instead of just being drawn to something that's going to, we know, is going to be go against what exactly it is we need. Yeah,
and just setting ourselves up for success, really.
Yeah.
Because really, let's face it, if I've got boxes of barbecue shapes at home, I'm going to eat them.
Same.
I mean, why would I try and rely on willpower to resist?
Yep.
It's just not going to happen. So
that's
just
right.
Don't buy them. Conversely, rewards. We should periodically reward ourselves, within reason, to strengthen self-control for long-term goals. So I always say this to my sons, actually. When they have a small win at something, whatever it may be at work, personal life, I always say to them, go and reward yourself.
Celebrate it.
Go and celebrate it. And I'm not talking always materialistically go buy yourself, you know, the plasma TV. I'm talking about just go get yourself a coffee or an ice cream or go sit out in the sun, go for a walk, whatever it is.
Yes.
But some sort of reward that's important to you, that means something to you.
Yeah.
Just when we have shown self-control to sit and write the 2,000 words for the day or walk the dog regularly. No.
I'll put that on the list that I don't use.
That's not going to happen in Mel's household.
No.
But, but something like that.
Yeah, we need those intermittent rewards when it's a big,
definitely,
big goal.
Yeah.
And because long term is a long time, depending on, you know, if it's a 2-year plan or something. Gosh, it's going to be a lot harder to stick to something if you're just waiting for that end day, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
You know, even in a job or, you know, like that's why we take holidays intermittently.
Yes.
We don't have to save them up for one big one.
Yes.
We can do little ones along the way
that keeps
us motivated, keeps us engaged in all areas of our life.
Yeah, and just rewards us for putting in the hard yakka.
Yep.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Acknowledgement, yep.
Exactly. Conversely, penalties. We can also impose penalties, again within reason, on ourselves to keep our long-term goals intact. So for me, my little reward is getting a hot chocolate from the local, well, it's actually an IGA, it's a cafe in an IGA, that no matter where I've been, they just have the best hot chocolates and good value as well.
Yep.
But I will sometimes do a penalty for myself. Well, not that I get one every day. It's more a reward rather than a habit.
Yes.
But I will actually sometimes do the old penalty. Well, you know what? I'm not going to have the hot chocolate today. I don't think I've really.
Okay.
Yeah. Doesn't happen that often. I do more the reward thing.
Yes. I was going to say, is it because you've done it in another area? You go, well, I've already had my reward, so I won't do that one. Maybe is it?
Yeah,
it's a bit of a.
Sometimes it's a balance. It's like, oh yeah, you know what? I rewarded myself yesterday.
I can't reward myself every day.
Perpetually reward myself.
Participation.
Otherwise, it kind of dilutes the specialness of it. So it's all within reason and regularity. The eighth tool that we arm ourselves to navigate this tricky jungle of uncontrolled emotions is optimism. Being optimistic but not naive about reaching our goals and our ability to avoid temptation is also beneficial. So being optimistic that I will write that book before I retire.
Absolutely.
I know I
like this one. Yeah, absolutely.
It's optimism that, you know, if I put in the work and, put in the work and persist and have self-control, then I'll get there. So that's optimistic, not naive.
No.
So values. We come to ninth tour is values, which we should increase the value of our goal while simultaneously reducing the value of temptations. Maybe that chocolate bar isn't as good as we think it is. So if our value was health, is health, maybe we should increase the value of this goal of health while simultaneously reducing the value of the chocolate bar. So if we imagine those old weight scales, you know,
yes,
the ones.
Let's say
the value of the health one is higher than the value of the chocolate bar.
Yes.
So we hold that in higher regard, if you like.
Yes.
It gets a higher position than the chocolate bar. So that's, you know, we could even have a visual up on the wall of that image of, well, you know what? The value of health is just higher than the value of the pleasure I would get from the chocolate bar.
Yeah. And I'm prioritising my health over the short-term game. Short-term game.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. A key and a favourite one of mine of tools that we're talking about is number 10, which is removing the emotional charge of things. I love this one. I recommend it to everyone. I've told everyone I know about this. It's useful to take the emotional charge out of objects.
Yeah.
For instance, if we think of junk food as a bland food, so let's say I'm trying to resist junk food, coming back to this value of healthy body, healthy life, and so I'm trying to use my self-control to resist junk food, this is a way of doing it where I reframe the junk food as just bland food.
Taking the power away from it.
Take the power out of it. So instead of thinking of chocolate as a pleasurable object, I just think of it as bland. So so the idea is to think of the most blandest food that you can think of. So it's not a food you like. It's not a food that you dislike. It's just bland. It's just nothing. So for me, it's wholemeal spaghetti. Okay.
Oh,
for me, it just tastes like cardboard. I don't dislike it per se. Alfalfa I dislike. But wholemeal spaghetti for me is so bland. So when I'm when I have something to do that I don't want to do, let's say your tax return, I hate doing tax returns, or filling out government forms, okay, I hate doing those, but they have to be done sometimes.
Yeah.
So I'll say to myself, you know what, I'm just going to do wholemeal spaghetti today instead of saying I'm going to do my tax return today.
And then I'm going to feel this and I'm going to feel that.
Yes, exactly. You take the emotional charge out of it by replacing tax return with wholemeal spaghetti.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do ... today.
Yes.
Whatever your bland food is.
So it's reframing, if I can say, it's reframing to get to the goal.
Yes, it is.
It's taking, because otherwise that'll distract you.
Yeah.
That distraction of all the emotions can impede on the actual achievement of getting the job done.
And then you're relying on willpower to try and get over those powerful emotions.
Yeah. Oh, say go you.
Yeah. Say it's frustration or anger even.
Yeah.
You take that, you're not concentrating on that.
Yes, all that energy is spent on that.
Yes.
And it's like what you say with anger. If you're having a fight with a family member or something like that, you, at the time, if you're really at a heightened stage, you're using your words to hurt, like I've said before. You're using the words to hurt and, you know, and then the messages you're trying to send is totally lost, as opposed to stopping, slowing down. Think about what it is you're actually trying to portray. What it is you're trying to get across.
That's right, and taking the emotion out of it.
Yes.
So if you're, for instance, a classic topic that causes a lot of strife for couples is money, talking about money, right? Even the word money, it can bring up all sorts of emotions within us, right, which date back from childhood. It's our relationship with money.
Yeah.
And, you know, our partner has a different relationship to money, and these things have to be negotiated between the two of us. If you say you have to sit down and have a discussion with each other, taking the emotional charge out of it by even renaming.
Yeah.
That we're not talking about money, we're talking about wholemeal spaghetti. Let's have a discussion about wholemeal spaghetti. And then you work through and do what you have to do.
That's right. And you're just the solutions. You're starting to think of solutions.
Yes.
And that's your goal. And that's where you're probably more likely to end up, as opposed to still ruminating and just talking about the same stuff.
Because your energy,
not moving on.
Yeah, your energy is then being put towards finding solutions.
Yeah.
Rather than still stuck at step one of dealing with the emotions that have come up because you've mentioned the money word.
Yes.
And you know you're going to have to get into a big discussion, however it makes you feel, whatever the emotions are. So this takes...
It works backwards in a way.
It's like any
mathematical problem sometimes can go backwards.
Yeah, take the...
Time schedules.
Yes, exactly.
Mm.
So take the emotional charger. I think that's a very powerful tool and I really... Mm. It's really worked for me. I remember when I had to sit down and write my thesis and I was sitting in the state library going, oh, my gosh, where do I even start? And I had all these doubts and da-da-da. And I thought, nope, take the emotional charge out of it.
Yeah.
It's just wholemeal spaghetti.
Yeah.
I'm just writing wholemeal spaghetti. I never mentioned the word thesis to myself again during the process of writing.
Yeah.
I was just writing wholemeal spaghetti and I just got on with it.
Yeah.
Then I just got on with it. I stopped. I didn't have to deal with the emotional impact. I was just in the second half of it, if you like, second part, which was just dealing with solutions.
That's right.
That's it. Cool. So I love that one. It's very, very powerful. So the 11th tool that we need in this jungle of uncontrolled emotions is beliefs. To continually reaffirm our core beliefs, such as family, creativity, etc., which help restore depleted levels of self-control. So if we were talking about health, for instance, continually reaffirming our core belief in, for instance, that we want to have, that we believe in.
The why?
The why? Yes, it's like the why. Mm-hmm. That's another way of saying it. Yeah. It's like the why of why are we doing this? Yeah. Why am I not buying the Tim Tams that really look cool because they've got now caramel filling or whatever? So things like that. Or when we were you were saying the example of speaking with our families.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, the belief, core belief that family is important to us. Family is our world. So that can help to determine your self-control.
Yeah, your motivation.
Yeah.
Yeah, your motivation.
Yeah, it is like your why, is it? Which ties into the 12th tool, actually, which is reasons. This supports us staying connected to the why of our actions. Our reasons for practicing self-control, difficult times in areas important to us. So to give an example, I've always made a rule with my partners to never, even at darkest arguments, never to get into name calling. That's just something that I have never gone to. And believe me, my current husband is European and we have some doozies of discussions, which I love because we get everything out in the open and we have differences of opinion or whatnot. But even in our most heated, passionate discussions, arguments, disagreements, never ever do we get into name calling. And that takes a level of self-control, definitely, because sometimes you want to get into name-calling. But we both exercise a level of self-control that makes that a no-go area for us, which works for us. So that's, as you said before, keeps connected to the why. So because I respect my husband, he respects me, we don't get into name-calling. And our 13th and final tool that we need to navigate this jungle of uncontrolled emotions is busyness. Interestingly, the act of busyness can give us a sense of self-importance, and studies have shown this leads to greater self-control. That's interesting, isn't it? Sense of self-importance. Now, I would assume that this is in a balance, though, as with everything in life. It has to be balanced because, as we've talked on previous podcasts, busyness is just a such an element of modern society these days that can be detrimental to us. On the flip side, busyness in this sense is related to a sense of meaning. That's what this means in this context. So it's a sense of meaning, of self-importance that can give us that feeling of self-control. So, for instance, busyness in my writing, because that's linked to a sense of meaning for me, then gives me a sense of self-control. So as I said to you before, I make sure I'm in my studio no later than 9 a.m. That's my level of self-control, because having the busyness of writing, because I have goals and that gives me a sense of meaning.
And then, so purpose as well?
Purpose, definitely.
Comes into that.
Definitely. Yep. So that helps me show a sense of self-control.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's what that 13th tool is. So I know there are a lot of these. You need a pretty big backpack, I think, don't you, with these 13 tools going through this jungle of uncontrolled emotions. So, but that's just the way it is. It is a big jungle. And as we said before, in midlife, we have so much on our plates, don't we? And let's be honest, in addition, for women, we have hormonal changes often, which I certainly know about. Mel's getting there. And it certainly adds another layer on top, doesn't it?
That's right. And it's evolving, all these things, this self-control. It evolves, like you said.
It does.
Some days we're better at it than others, and in some areas of our lives, we can achieve it and knock it on its head, but we can really
master it.
Yeah, yes. That's right. And other areas are still a work in progress, and that's okay. Right.
Yes, and we're not robotic. Let's face it. We're not going to be 100% self-controlled creatures, because I think that makes us robots or
boring.
Maybe psychopaths, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Boring, at the very least. So this isn't about trying to gain self-control 100% of the time in all areas of our life. No. That's just completely unrealistic.
Yeah.
What it is about is gaining self-control in those areas that matter to us.
Yes, that insight.
Well, if it's family, for instance, having better conversations, communications, showing that self-control with our loved ones, maybe it's in the workplace, maybe it's driving in peak hour traffic,
it's cohesion.
Showing self-control.
Cohesion we're looking for.
Yeah, cohesion within ourselves, with others and whatnot. Mm. And just having tools to help us along with that, because willpower alone just won't do it.
No, that's right. And these situations are going to keep coming up for us.
Yeah. So like any situation in life, the better prepared we are, having these tools, like knowing what our blandest food is, for instance, and reframing situations to do that. Or, for instance, I put on classical music when I'm driving. I automatically change the channel and put classical music on, because I know that calms me so that I drive in a calmer manner and there's less chance of me getting road rage. So things like that, doing things like that to help us rather than just relying on willpower is the key to developing self-control in midlife. So that's a wrap from Mel and I. As always, you can find further information on this and other interesting topics on the Midlife Maps website. Thanks for listening, and as you continue to navigate midlife, remember Guns N' Roses' insightful words, "Welcome to the jungle."